fiscal year 2017 budget hearing for Monday, May 9th. It's now 3 o'clock. We're going to go into this budget hearing with departments associated with some of the related to the executive branch and others not so, standalone organizations. I have a request from, before we start, I want to recognize who's at the table with us. My legislative aide, Brian Holleiter, is taking the notes for the meeting today. Council members in attendance are Councilmember Kilpatrick, Councilman Tackett, Councilman Smiley, Councilman Weiner, Councilmember Diller. I'm Councilman John Cartier, chairing the meeting today. I have a request from our Chief Attorney for Newcastle County, Bernard Pepakai, has a conflict and he would like to be able to leave early, and he has requested the rearrange the order of the budget hearing so that the Office of Law will go first. Do I have the Senate Council?
Yeah, that's fine. So move.
So move. I have a motion. I have a second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right, we're going to allow, on request of Mr. Pepakai, the Office of Law can go first. Please be seated at the table and present the budget for FY 2017 for the Office of Law. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Bernard Pepakai, County Attorney, Office of Law, here before you today to present the Office of Law budget for fiscal year 2017. As each of you have in front of you, and I will be very brief because the Office of Law budget is pretty straightforward and similar to how it has been in the previous years. But starting on page one, as it outlines, the Office of Law has currently has 18 authorized positions consisting of attorneys and non-attorney positions. Page two of our presentation deals with the increase that the Office of Law is asking, which is basically none, where the budget that we're requesting for this year has a 0.01% increase, which is really basically no increase at all. We kind of tried to keep the same budget from previous year. As we go to page three, it shows how the vast majority of our budget is taken up by personnel costs, which constitutes 82.41%. And the next largest percentage of our budget deals with contractual services, primarily outside counsel. As you move forward to page four, just the history of our authorized positions, which has remained constant over the last 7 years. Page five deals with our diversity comparison. And currently in the Office of Law, as it is how it's currently structured in the Office of Law, slightly different than what this chart shows, simply because in 2016 we had a couple of changes in the office, but the numbers are pretty much the same. The chart basically shows two black males, two white males, four black females, six white females, and one Hispanic female. The only change we really have now is there's now three white males instead of the two white males. So our diversity numbers are still good. They're still maintaining exceptional quality. But that number, I just wanted to note the difference what's in our booklet versus what actually is currently here today. Page six of the Office of Law just deals with the same numbers that we just went over, our budget requests and how they've broken down primarily into salary and wages. As we move forward, the most next significant thing will probably be, I can go over the budget details in page seven, which is another way of breaking down what we have already discussed and talked about. As is indicated before, then when we move forward to page 10, deals with our accomplishments and some of our significant accomplishments in the previous year has been to, we have defended successfully many and several lawsuits, received favorable judgment, trying to minimize the cost to the county as it relates to litigation costs, try to Yes, successfully facilitated land acquisitions, considering Route 9 library and other things that we have purchased that the Office of Law has been involved with. We have done all these things. We have done all these things, and we are proud of the work that we have done for the county as it relates to that.
Excuse me, Chairman.
Councilman Smiley.
I don't know if it's going to help. It's going through the wall, but they're going to close my door. They're out there working on the windows. They're tired of me throwing stuff down the steps and getting a window that opens. Sorry. So hopefully that'll cut some noise down.
Thank you for that explanation of the annoying sound over here.
Keep hoping. Okay, I'm sorry.
Some of the challenges that we see in the Office of Law is, one, maintaining our successful litigation rate. So far, we have won everything that has been decided by final resolution with the court in the last 3.5 years. So with that comes, of course, a high stakes challenge to make sure we maintain that and to try to reduce the reliance on outside counsel where we can, so we can maintain reduced costs in our contractual services line, and trying to do and help in any way we can to assist to be preventative of any potential suits. As page 12 shows our vacancies, our current standing is somewhat different than what you have in your book because of how I indicated we had some changes, but the assistant county attorney position is currently filled, so that is no longer vacant. The law office administrator position, we're anticipating that to be filled momentarily. In fact, we just completed the interview process for that, and it was just simply in the process of waiting for HR to calculate, do their due diligence as it relates to calculating the score and how it needs.
Oh, hell, that could be the next budget.
Councilman Weiner, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bernard, who's the first assistant county attorney that left, and who's the new attorney replacing that position?
Well, the first assistant position, it's still vacant. That position is still vacant. Mm-hmm. But the person that left at that time was Megan San Francisco.
Okay. And so who are the new attorneys that we've hired?
The new attorneys are Jordan Perry and Adam Singer.
And what are their backgrounds in terms of experience?
Yes, both of them come from the private sector, mm-hmm. Have extensive experience. Adam worked at Cooch & Taylor, I believe, for close to 20 years maybe. Mm-hmm. Very active in the Bar Association, has been around in the legal community. I'm assuming, I don't know if you know or are familiar with him or not. He has a background, did a lot primarily in bankruptcy, but in that he also did some financial type of work as it related to that. So that's his background. Jordan comes from the private sector as well. She also is a former prosecutor. She's been a member of the bar for the Delaware bar for, I believe, 6 or 7 years, actually more like 8 or 9 perhaps, and a member of the Maryland Bar prior to that for a few years.
Thank you.
And next is our, on page 13 basically, is the contractual services, concerning how our contractual services is primarily broken down. The bulk of that number rests with outside legal counsel. And page 14 deals with the budget by object code.
Council Member Diller, you have
yes,
a question.
I just have a question. Would it make more sense to hire the first assistant county attorney rather than have attorneys, outside attorney fees of $275,000?
Well, a couple of things. Hopefully, the first assistant position will be filled in the coming months, so I'm looking forward to that. But the second thing is that the unique nature of outside attorney fees isn't always about workload, but it's this also about expertise. So if someone is performing a particular, is a particular type of work in the private sector, it may not make sense to recruit someone that may have a nuanced area to work for the county if we may not utilize that nuance on an ongoing basis, not to mention, quite frankly, the salaries are typically more lucrative in the private sector than they are in the public sector.
Councilman Smiley.
But your observation is correct, and that's why we're trying to put forth that effort. You are correct to fill that position so we can minimize in circumstances when we are, when it is about a volume thing, and we can develop certain expertise. So you are absolutely correct, and that's what we're trying to do.
Thank you.
Okay. Councilman Smiley.
And aren't some of these fees related to cases that have been out there for quite a while? We've got attorneys that have been involved in them, been handling. So it wouldn't be fiduciarily prudent to cut them off and begin fresh, but we have some cases that have been going on for quite a few years, so we get occasional costs related to those as well.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, I would probably venture to say our largest cases are primarily in that category that have been going on for years, and there's just large pieces of litigation that
you just know, waiting on the people to die off.
I wouldn't phrase it like that. So.
No, but I
but I think as it relates to my budget, that's pretty much it, and I'm willing to, I welcome any questions that anyone may have.
Thank you for that. And we appreciate that your budget numbers are relatively flat. That being said, any questions, comments from members of council concerning the Office of Law Budget? Councilmember Kilpatrick.
Thank you. Just in looking on page 13 at advertising services and its services for sheriff's sale, do we have an attorney that works specifically on sheriff's sales?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have an attorney that assists with the sheriff's office and sheriff's sales, but the sheriff also have their own attorney, and you also have, they do their own deed searches and things of that nature. So some of that money falls into that category.
Is there any way through the department that you can think of that you could help facilitate, if even if it meant a change in the law, that we could facilitate getting some of these homes to sheriff sale faster? I mean, is there any, and I don't need an answer today, but something that I would like you to think about. I mean, we all in our districts have homes that have been sitting for years and years and years that are vacant and completely deteriorating and taking down the value throughout the entire neighborhood. And if there was any way that we as a county could put something into the law, if that was possible, that talked about vacant properties and only being allowed to sit for X number of years, or if we did any remediation on them, like we had to put money from the revolving fund into them, even if they were still paying their taxes, and that would that lien precipitate us taking them to sheriff sale?
Councilman Smiley, excellent question.
I just want to say maybe we bring them all into the same room, because as I recall, we've had a presentation that land use, community services were working together and going to bring law in to formulate a streamlined service for us to be able to take them to sheriff's sale and hopefully have the partnership between community services and nonprofits on site to hopefully pick up the properties at that. So my understanding is we've got three departments working together. And hopefully that will expedite it, not slow it down. But maybe once we get the engineering all done, we get them all together and find out where we are with it.
Right, and those that somebody may want to donate or give to a nonprofit are one thing, but there are a lot of houses out there that are the just people have died. The kids don't want the house. They don't live here. They let it sit. They don't. I guess I don't quite understand why somebody doesn't just go to a sale. Why you don't put it on for a reasonable value and try to sell it? But that doesn't seem to be the mindset of many people out there, because we probably have one in every community in this county, at least, that's in some form of vacancy, whether it's that they lost their, you know, they forfeited the house or somebody died or whatever, but if you don't know about it and other two departments are working on it, then we ultimately are going to have to come back through law anyway. So if you maybe could be the lead person or assign somebody to be the lead person to go back to community services and land use and see if we can work together and get something on the ground sooner rather than later, because I'll tell you, we've got a lot of frustrated constituents out there.
The points you're bringing up are completely valid, and I think similar to what Councilman Smalley said, I do believe there may have been a working group formed. I'm not exactly certain where they are in the stage, but law has participated in that. But what I can do is I can go back and I can look into that and have somebody get back with you on where that stands.
Thank you.
I'd just like to add some comment to this. My understanding is if the property's vacant, but and say owned by a financial institution, they've been paying the taxes, and let's say they're pretty much maintaining the property, code hasn't expended funds. You know, we have no real legal lever in the current legal situation to force that property to sheriff sale. Am I correct about that?
There are a lot of policy implications as it relates to sheriff sale, and there's a lot going on. For example, the more we get involved, the more it exposes the county to liability as well. Mm-hmm. So on one side, we want to help facilitate cleaning up the neighborhood when it deals with sheriff sale so we can get rid of blight. But on the other side, if we step too far, it can expose the county to legal and financial liability by doing so. So it's a delicate balance. And where that balance lies, we can only try our best to try to, you know, balance both interests. But it's not as easy as someone hasn't paid their taxes, take them to sheriff sale. And it's a lot more complicated than that. So our legal authority, as well as our, our protecting our financial interest, really weighs into those decisions as well.
Okay, and just to further comment on vacant properties and discovering new ones, I went into mm-hmm. a subdivision just recently and found three. So, I mean, this problem is, if anybody really is out there really hunting around for the vacants, it's getting bigger every day. If you go to look.
Anybody wants to look, you can come stand on my front step and you can see five right around my house. One finally got it for sale, so I'm not one.
One other further comment. I know there are organizations in the nonprofit community that really need houses to deal with folks coming out of, mental health treatment and want to be in the community. There are opportunities we can get. We had one community services talked about a house being donated by Wells Fargo or that kind of use. So we've got a tremendous amount of underutilized housing stock out there and plenty of need. So that's another avenue where we could partner together with the nonprofit sector and maybe work with the banks to donate some of this. And it may be in their best interest to do that because they can value it at the rates that they have currently as the property on their books, whereas they go to sheriff sale, they're not going to realize that value. So I think there's some creative things that can be done there to move some of these properties along into new use as well.
And I know Sophia Hansen has been doing some things along those lines as well. She has been very active trying to help facilitate turning over blighted properties, so including those that may be eligible or have been on sheriff sale.
Any other questions, comments for Mr. Pepperkind on the fiscal year 2017 Office of Law budget from members of council? Anybody from the public? Thank you, Mr. Pepperkind.
Thank you.
Glad to accommodate. With that, I'd like to make a motion to return to the order of departments.
Second.
We have a motion, a second, return to normal order. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. All right, we're going to move back to the regular order, and next up is the Ethics Commission. Please have a seat.
Good afternoon, I'm Johanna Bishop, I'm Chair of the Ethics Commission, and thank you for the opportunity to present the budget. I just want to note, first of all, that the Ethics Commission, unlike some of the other people here today, are all community volunteers. And we have an Ethics Commission of 7 members. They're all volunteers who really believe in what they're doing, and so I'll let that speak for itself. What I'd like you to maybe look at in the ethics budget, and yes, it's the pretty blue book in front of you. On page 3, you'll see there's an overview of the Ethics Commission budget going back to 2010. You'll see there's not a lot of variation there. It's been pretty steady. We've operated on a modest budget. Sitting before you and coming to you again today, a little bit of deja vu, because some of you will know that we were here a few weeks ago or a month or so ago asking for an amendment to this year's budget. And that's really because this year's work on the Ethics Commission has been unprecedented. So what you have before you is the budget as it was presented to you by the County Executive Office. If you turn to page 5, you will see a more detailed breakdown of the Ethics Commission budget. And you'll see that we hold our costs quite steady, with the exception of we'll probably be coming to you again with an amendment for fiscal year 16-17. Because the work that we've been doing in this fiscal year is most likely to continue in the next fiscal year. And we just need to be transparent with you and let you know that ahead of time. Are there any questions about our budget?
Councilmember Diller.
Yes, I'm referring to the gold report. I don't know if people picked those up.
The gold report was the amendment that was sent to you by legal counsel. That is the report, that is the budget that we originally asked for. In anticipation of it's not an amendment. This is the budget request that we had originally asked for, anticipating that we would have more work to do than what we previously had to do. The budget in the blue book is the one that was sent to you by the executive office. So that's the difference. Are there any other questions?
Councilman Smiley.
Yeah. I just want to say, we did your amendment that we needed, and in that research it showed that every year funds were turned back.
Yes.
And unfortunately, as I stated, my belief is we're involved in an anomaly that's taking place. Hopefully, a change of address will take care of some of this. But if not, we remain ready to do what we need to do to make sure you have funds to do your job. And it's unfortunate what your department's going through now. But I mean, we watched it some years back with COVID when we had someone traveling all over New Castle County calling people in, and they had to expend a lot of their budget chasing things like that. But we'll be here just as we were with that. If you need the funds, it will happen. Hopefully this anomaly will dry up, but as with you, I don't expect it until after November.
Well, thank you very much for that comment, and I just want to reiterate again that the Ethics Commission works really hard, and we do what we can with the money that we have available to us. Any of the funds that you gave us this year, if it's not used, obviously we return that to you, but we can't use that money for the next coming year, so that's why we'd have to come back.
No, I understand that.
Councilor
Thank you. Yeah, Ms. Bishop, I too echo those sentiments, and obviously we need a strong Ethics Commission. You know, you are the watchdog for New Castle County. Truly, we, look at what you bring us and itemize it, and we do, hope that you're being as fiscal responsible as you possibly can be, and as we've seen in the past, as mentioned, you've returned monies and all, and not just look to spend your whole budget, and we thank you for that. But obviously, as the previous councilman said, if you find yourself in a situation where you are truly strapped. We do look forward to seeing that amendment brought to us, because we want to make sure that you are able to do what you need to do.
Thank you.
Councilman Wire.
Thank you. Appears that the investigation is underway. We'll be continuing into the next fiscal year, as you explained to us a few weeks ago. And with that in mind, it's therefore totally certain that you will need an amendment. It's affirmative nod you're giving us.
I'm not committal at this point in time.
So, I'm just making an observation. Right. With that in mind, another option council could consider is to amend the budget to accommodate for expenses that are certain, and if some miracle happens and not used, then you could return the money.
Absolutely.
Okay. Absolutely. Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Councilman Crowley.
Again, I'm just going to say, we're looking at the first 6 months of your budget before, let's be honest, before the elections are over. After that, who knows what will happen, whether it'll continue to dry up, whatever. So I'm hopeful that the games will stop playing and your office will quit being used for the wrong purpose. Not internally.
We just all hope for ethical behavior on everyone's part.
Well, I'll stick for hoping to be a millionaire.
Council member Kirkpatrick.
Thank you. I just want to comment, not throwing stones at anybody, whether they're currently employed or not, but if we pass a budget, it's not a six-month budget, it's a one-year budget. And if we anticipate that the expenses are going to be as predicted in this yellow-covered book, then it just makes sense to me that we should be approving the FY 2017 request for 38.01%. at $298,003, because if the investigations are underway, there's a process in the Ethics Commission which is akin to a preliminary finding of a sufficient factual basis to proceed forward. I don't know whether that's occurred or not, but it just appears to me that what happens in the election or not is completely irrelevant from our point of view in analyzing the fact that the request is going to be 38% higher, and we should be, by all due diligence process, budgeting based upon anticipated costs for a full year, just not for 6 months.
Councilman Smiley.
I'm just going to say, I don't think we're in an ethical meltdown. Hopefully, a lot of erroneous charges that have come from more than one person, against more than one person, as I said, will go away. But I understand we have a 12-month budget. As I said, I'm just figuring that I anticipate this budget will do, but if not, we'll do what we have to do, like we do all departments.
Councilman White.
Yeah, I just think it's inappropriate for council to be casting any suggestion that any of the work that is done through the Ethics Commission or elsewise has anything to do with that which has merit before the Ethics Commission. And to have to ask for a budget increase in 6 months before an election, to me, brings a footnote to in election time, rather than simply doing what we ought to be doing in the due course of business at this time. That's just my opinion. I speak for myself only.
Councilmember Kilpatrick.
Thank you. I tend to agree with Councilman Weiner that this is a 12-month budget, and if this is some, first of all, one of the discussions we had the last time around was that we need to find a way of funding for the Ethics Commission that doesn't have to have the approval of people maybe that you are investigating, and I don't know how that happens, but I think we place ourselves in a precarious situation when we sit and argue about what we need, and we promise you that we will come back and give you something if you need it, when nobody here can really promise that, because it takes seven people to vote. So I am one that would prefer that it come up front, that we see the money that we need, because that's how we set our budget on an annual basis. If I know I've got X number of dollars
knowing that you always give it back if you don't spend it, then that's what my budget is based on. It's not based on 6 months. I get irritated when people come back in 3 months after the budget is passed and say, oh, I now need another $500,000 or $200,000 or $50,000. Did you not know that back then? So if I ask that question of every other department, then I, if this follows, I have to go along with Councilman Weiner and say that if you believe this is what you need, then this is the budget that we should be giving you and not playing games with you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Dare, then Councilman Smiley.
By my calculations, you need another 82,000. That's what I'm seeing with the numbers.
Councilman Smiley.
I'm just going to make a comment. I'm not playing games with the Ethics Commission. I'm not one that has filed false claims against people that have created the situation. I don't know that the budget is enough. The difference between this budget and others is they don't have the flexibility that others do of not filling vacancies or whatever. This workload is an unknown. And I didn't say it's a 6 month budget. I recognize it's a 12 month budget. I'm just hopeful that this will carry it. And I'm not looking to send a message that we're in an ethical meltdown. I don't believe we are. We're just in an erroneous charge meltdown. But whatever right. Council wants to do, I mean, all you gotta do is find the money and bring the amendment.
Did you want to say something?
Well, just that
Councilmember Patrick, then Weiner, and then Tackett.
I have no idea who has filed charges or who has charges filed against them. That's not something that any of us are privy to.
Well, actually, so. Some people broadcast it. We've seen that.
Well, I guess I missed that memo.
I'll send you the email.
Okay.
Councilman Weiner.
Yes. I just want to set for the record that I think the reference to the term false claim or erroneous complaints should not be discussed in a public forum, because as the Ethics Commission does, it's based upon facts and law, and if complaints are proceeding forward, it's because there has been a preliminary investigation which deems any investigation going forward as having merit, and these investigations are underway, and we ought not to be relying upon some assumption that there are false charges that have been brought. We should be based our budget determination on Ethics Commission's deemed request for FY 2017, which is 38.1% increase, and not put the Ethics Commission, as Councilwoman Kilpatrick said, in a position where they have to worry about the vicissitudes of the political winds 6 months from now, when members sitting here at this table could be targets of, theoretically, targets of charges being brought. I think that hamstrings the Ethics Commission. We ought not to be doing that.
Councilman Tackett. And I want to wrap this up.
Because the only thing I was going to say, Mr. Chairman, was I too, here are the comments I agree also, and I'd like to ask you to explore, perhaps let's bring the amendment forward and just fully fund this Ethics Commission, let them do the job that we've championed them to do, and make sure that they have the resources that's needed, and not, again, have them come back mid-year or whatever to dawn another situation or whatever that may hold. And I think we've drifted way out of our lane. A lot of the comments are being said today, yes, as far as this goes. So
Councilman Smiley and I want to.
Yeah, I just want to say, I would like to make those comments since I've been the subject of false and erroneous charges through the Ethics Commission. But that being said, whether they require investigation or not, it still erodes the budget of the Ethics Commission. It still costs funds whether it moves through or not. And that's my point. Once they're filed, there's work that has to be done that takes funding out of the budget. That's the point I was trying to make.
I guess I'd like to kind of wrap up this discussion and just say I too am very much in favor of a strong Ethics Commission, and I know that the Ethics Commission functionally receives complaints and investigates complaints. They don't generate the complaints, they receive them and investigate them, and they must have the resources in order to do that. So I'm not opposed to the idea of, you know, putting a budget amendment forward to fully fund them in accordance with the original request, I'm not opposed to that. I would support that. I would also like to remind folks that while it's great to have an absolutely certain budget process with certainty going into the next fiscal year, we live in very uncertain times. Our budget is produced before the state produces their budget. We have revenue streams we receive from state government that are always in question now. So while it's great to have certainty about the budget process, I just think my experience here has been a lot of uncertainty in a lot of respects. But that being said, I would be interested in moving forward with the original request for the fully fund the Ethics Commission. Councilman Weiner.
Thank you. I just want to observe that in a county government which has $250 million for its budget, when you add all of the items in, the differential between $215,000 and $298,000, I think was stated accurately by Councilwoman Diller, is $82,000 and change. So the concern about how our budget income might, expenses might be hit by other outside factors is small when compared to the certainty of making sure our Ethics Commission has the money it needs and not be concerned about the vicissitudes of how members of council might vote on this 6 months from now when the funding is needed. So I support an amendment that it could go forward with the original budgeting. And do I understand, Mr. Chair, that you'll be sponsoring that?
Yes, that's true. Just to throw out a financial lifeline on this question, we fully fund the additional monies requested by the Ethics Commission. If there are residual funds left, they go back to the general fund. Is that correct? I'm asking this county CFO.
Yeah.
But Coop, yes, that would be correct. Any funds left in anyone's budget.
Right. But just for the record, that was on the record. Thank you. Any other comments, questions?
Yes, thank you for your support, and thank you for the lively comments at the table today.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to be added as a co-sponsor on that amendment.
Do we know that Councilman Weiner?
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I'd also like to add, this is probably the only department we've heard so far that's come before us that is going to leave with extra money.
Thank you.
Or didn't get what they
Council
asked.
Councilmember Dillard.
Well,
we don't know that they're going to leave with extra money. I think they're going
to
leave with
7 to vote against the Ethics Commission. Like
and add me as a co-sponsor.
Duly noted. Thank you, Councilmember Ditto. Moving along, any other questions, comments from members of the public on the request for the fiscal year 2017 from the County Ethics Commission? All right, moving along under the regular order of departments, risk management.
Okay, the 2017 budget, moving past page one is our position. We currently have 5. Historical data on page 2 regarding since 2010 going forward, our budget increase this year, we are asking for a 14.49% increase. Page 3 outlines each one of our areas that are most expensive. Workers' compensation takes up 73% of our budget. Page 4 positions have stayed pretty steady. Page 5, diversity, 5 women in our department. Page 6 goes over the record.
You could please pause our recording device. If that,
if oh. I'm not sure if it's still on.
Okay.
I applaud.
If there's an opening, we'll be here. Are we okay now?
Yeah.
Okay. Page 6 outlines the recommended budget. And then moving on to page 7, contractual services. Out of the risk management budget goes things that are kind of out of our control, but they are in our budget, which would be new hire physicals, return to work exams, fitness for duties, annual physicals of the police and EMS. So those have increased as those numbers have increased for that much, so we are asking for an increase there. Our fixed charges on page 8 is the majority of our increase, which is another area which we don't have a lot of control over is settlements, because the settlements are in our budget. However, the settlements are done by the law department. So, but the workers' compensation, medical, and things have went up historically a few, but the majority of our money is ate up by workers' comp settlements and general insurance settlements that we've had. Moving on to page 9, positions. One position was transferred from us. 10, pretty nothing. Our goals and accomplishments are pretty much the same that were outlined in the budget address. We have no vacancies on page 13. Contractual services is all pretty much speaks for itself. The budget by line code, the line items, is 15, 16, and 17. Questions?
Any questions, comments from members of council concerning the fiscal year 2017 budget recommendation for risk management? Councilmember Kilpatrick.
Thank you. I just have one. So if you get hurt on the job and you're on workers' comp, then all of your claims, all of your meds, everything is covered under workers' comp, or does it cross back and forth between insurance that the county carries on an employee and workers' comp?
No, that would all be covered under your workers' comp.
So if it's a workers' comp injury, then everything is workers' comp. Okay.
And when we do have claims from, like, someone goes, say if you broke your ankle at work, but you went to the hospital and use your, they'll segregate. Even though we're so sure we still get the letter, this is work-related. So everything is covered.
So anything that is work-related.
Indemnity payments, we are still paying, as you know, indemnity payments back from 1993. 50% of our settlements this year were for cases prior to 2013. So we're still, you know, we have a lot of legacy in those figures.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions, comments from members of council concerning this budget request? I just would like to, understand this a little, in more detail. So you pay out on the settlements out of your budget.
Correct.
The law negotiates on issues of workman's comp and settlements.
Correct.
And then you turns the bill over to your department.
Correct.
And where are we with these legacy costs? Are we going to continue to have, large increase, or is this very hard to predict?
It's very hard to predict at this point. I mean, one of the things that our goal has been is to manage our workers' comp in-house so that we could have the savings in the not having a TPA. But once, an employee has an attorney, it changes, over from my department to the law. So we're hoping. Our goal is to keep as much litigation as we can, and we have reduced dramatically, but we are still paying a lot of settlements that were prior to 2012.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? Yes, Councilmember Diller.
Is there ever a review from the state level over what we're doing in terms of workers' compensation?
I believe we have an internal audit. And we have our actuary report every year.
But no one actually is reviewing these files other than the audit files. Because I could see what an auditor is looking for and what someone who might have, who might be looking at compensation review, those might be two different things.
Well, those things are set by the state and the IAB. So,
okay.
A worker is paid in the county. They're paid their full salary because of a policy that was put in place. The workers' comp, once they're separated from employment, is 66 and two-thirds.
Right.
And that is the only compensation that they would receive other than a disfigurement or a permanency, which those are set by the IAB. They're not set by the county. Mm-hmm. They're negotiated through the attorneys and so forth.
Okay.
So I would say that probably the watchdog over us is the IAB, because the medical bills are all paid to the fee schedule too. So everything has to be adjusted to the fee schedule and any bill that's paid.
Any other questions, comments on workman's comp? On the risk management budget for fiscal year 2017, which is really workman's comp and settlements for the most part. Okay. Any comments, questions from members of the public?
No.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to move along to technology, Office of Technology.
Good afternoon, everybody. Johnny Early, IS. I'll try to set a land speed record to get here to management. It's pretty good. Very good. Very good. I'm going to breeze through the first couple pages as our positional breakdown, budget over the years, diversity, breakdown of our budget has stayed stagnant over the years. Most of it comes from personnel costs and contractual services. I might add that we've done a tremendous job, I think, last year and moving into this next year of cutting down on our contractual services, part of that being the service and support of systems, not only hardware, software, but the storage background that goes into that. We take an active approach in reviewing those service contracts and are starting to leverage a lot of new projects in upgrading to the latest and greatest that we can maintain, putting Newcastle County on the edge of technology, as it will, and really dismantling some of the old archaic systems, structures, and so forth. And as we move forward, we're making a great effort in consolidating some of those services that we can reduce those maintenance costs, as you will see on page 7, where we have reduced the contractual services. But as you will note, our budget is going up 2%, mainly because we filled some positions that were vacant in the past. But the largest cost is due to the communication utilities line. Primarily, we have our data circuits between the four main campuses of City County, Public Safety, Government Center, and Special Services. It is the idea that we have a single point of failure where we've had lines cut, our data lines, leaving some of the campuses like the City Council exposed and pretty much locked into just the City County building. We're building out areas where if we have a line cut, we can still get back. Folks can get out to the internet, they can get to email, we can perform business as usual. So it is a slight bump, and that's where the increase comes for those data lines. As you see, moving forward, the breakdown on the following pages will be each line item consisting of the budget. Also, we are retitling some of the GIS positions. I believe there's already an ordinance in place coming up for a vote. I believe that's tomorrow, it may be. Again, it's just retitling the GIS positions to show exactly what they perform, the duties they perform, and coordinate those efforts. As you will see moving forward, you will see some of our accomplishments. Like I mentioned before, we are replacing a lot of the server storage hardware to consolidate and reduce the cost of service and maintenance. As we do that, we are moving forward in putting in a more secure environment where we are having active monitoring now, a higher security enhanced area of audit logs. Again, active monitoring and seeing where people are coming and going to in terms of threats from the outside. We have also almost upgraded and done the PeopleSoft application, which we are hoping is right on the edge. We are testing it right now. Hopefully that will fall into the time frame that we have for 2 months, I believe it's supposed to be handed over to let HR and payroll handle those efforts. On the next page, a couple challenges. We are planning on upgrading our email environment, upgrading our financial tier system. We are gathered with Mr. Coop and those people in finance to review and see if that's possible, see if it's an area you go into. But all these new projects and everything that we're performing right now and all the upgrades that we're going through leaves us to the vacancies that we have. As you see, we've had these vacancies for some time that we are planning on filling this coming year. They have been funded, they are in the budget, and we are in a position now where we know where we need them. for what disciplines that we need them for in order to position IS to better serve the county and to produce better customer service to the county overall. With that said, everything else seems to be in line and self-explanatory. Do we have any questions?
Questions, comments from members of council? Councilmember Kilpatrick, Councilman Smiley.
What does active monitoring mean?
Active monitoring means we have folks that sometimes can notify IS that something is down. They label it as down. I can't get to it. I don't know what's going on. We are positioning ourselves to actually see everything that's going on within the system on monitoring boards along the wall so we can have the alerts before you even know something's down. We are aware of it.
Even if I'm at home, there, it just,
we do not monitor anyone from the outside coming in per se. We do not look for anybody doing specific works. We are more in charge of the systems.
But there are times after you do upgrades on the systems, and there's times when we come in from the web that we can't get into things, specifically archives. That always seems to be a problem.
Yeah, email
so
archive.
Is that something that you would know that we, would you know that getting into archives from the outside
mm-hmm.
is a problem
yes.
before we announce it?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Councilman Smiley.
I just want to thank your department. I know it took place after the books were produced. Regardless of how much cooperation and coming together there was between assessment, the sheriff's office, and everyone else on being willing to transfer information, it was your department that wrote the computer program that brought it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And I thank you very much for that.
I appreciate it, but I want to say that that's exactly what we're here for. We don't make money for the county. We help you make money for the county.
Well, you will. That program will save money for the county. So,
thank you very much.
It's a long, hard draw, but once everybody got on board, but again, none of it would have worked if you guys hadn't stepped up to the plate in that program. So I appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much for the comments.
Yes, comments, public comments on the Office of Technology budget for FY 2017.
Yeah, Bob Wasserbach, County Auditor. Hi, Jeff. Can you just let me know, I'm looking at the organization chart, and I know there's another manager that was hired in the last few months, and I guess you're a manager and the other
yes.
guy, I forget what his name is.
Mr. Arnett.
Can you let me, can you just explain what functions you're responsible for and what functions he's responsible for?
Yeah.
Just for my own information, if I ever have a problem with something, I'm calling the right person.
Sure. Mr. Arnett, Tim Arnett, he oversees the help desk and the applications group. I oversee the phones, the network and infrastructure group, the security group, and the GIS group. But again, as I explained and I've explained to some folks, I'm always a phone call away if anyone ever needs me. I've answered it morning, noon, night, and the weekends. My sole purpose is to make sure that you can do your job. That's my job.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments from members of council or members of the public? Councilman Smiley.
I'll just give you something to take back with you. If you can ever set it up so that we can access the existing code complaints file from outside, without you having to go into our personal computers, I appreciate it. A lot of times I get a code complaint when I'm not in the office, and I always like to look and see if there's an open case first. And a few years back when I inquired about that, the response was, oh, just bring us your personal computer, and well, that wasn't going to happen.
No.
So,
I don't know why that would.
We don't know
if there's a picture. Yeah.
I will get right on that, and I.
So if that's a possibility, I appreciate it.
I know who to speak to about that, and I will get on. I will get right back to you.
Don't like to do it redundant. If there's already an open one, there's no sense of me filing one. So
I'll find out either way.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments from members of public or council on the Office of Technology? All right, thank you very
much. Thank you very much for your time.
And we're going to move along to Office of Procurement for fiscal year 2017. Tony, step up to the plate.
Good afternoon, everyone. Tony Gardner, Chief of Procurement. So I'm going to start with page one, actually. We have 13 positions in the Office of Procurement, 8 in purchasing, 1 in reproduction. We have 3 in distribution and 1 in central services. Okay, moving on to page 2. We actually have a decrease of 0.59% for our request for budget this year. So it's a small decrease, and I will get into why a little bit later, but the main emphasis is that we had some new positions filled, and those positions came in at a lower step. Okay. If you jump over to page 4, we've pretty much been flat since the early, you can say like 7-8 years, pretty much either 13 or 12 positions within that time frame of Office of Procurement. Page 5, most of the cost is within purchasing. As you can see, 60% of the charges are in purchasing, but we also have a breakdown of 12% in distribution, 19% in reproduction, and 9% in central services. Page 6, in regards to diversity, we're pretty much a diverse group. As you can see, we have a lot of women within in our group. We actually have five white women, 5 black women, 2 black males, and 1 white male in the group. As you can see on page 7, we have a decrease of 2.39% in salaries, and that's what I pointed to earlier, is it's in regards to we fill positions at a lower level. If you go to page 10, what we're looking to do in page 10 is actually we have a position, senior purchasing agent, that we're looking to create, and it's actually a position that we're creating. It's a step between purchasing agent and chief purchasing agent. We have a senior purchasing agent that sits in between. So this is a new position that we're putting in place. Page 12, in regards to accomplishments. Since this inception, we have over $1.2 million in surplus sales. So that's been a great program for us on GovDeals. So since 2010, we've had over $1.2 million in sales.
That's good.
Another thing that we did that was great this year in regards to accomplishments is that we partnered with the Division of Visually Impaired, and we actually had the cafe set up in the government center. Another item that I wanted to touch base with, and that was a lot of work that was done from Ruth Kowalski in my department in regards to transitioning the dog control over to the state, which was a big deal at one point. We transitioned the dog control and also dog licenses over to the state of Delaware. In regards to central services on page 12, what we're trying to do in central services is move all the hard copies over to electronic, and that's been done. We're working on that process. We're looking to transfer as much as possible from hard copy over to electronic. Okay. The major challenge that we have is really trying to make sure on page 13 is trying to keep metrics and making sure we keep up-to-date metrics. And we're looking to do that. We're actually refining our process. We do have a lot of good metrics. It's just making sure that we can share these metrics and get them out in a way that you guys can use it and look at it and understand what's going on in regards to the numbers. And actually, any questions?
Any questions, comments from members of council concerning the Office of Procurement and the fiscal year 2017 budget request? Councilman Smiley.
I appreciate all your work in the transition of dog control pet licensing to the state of Delaware. Did you notice you forgot to transition the cost?
Yeah, we were.
Just in case it was an oversight, I just wanted to mention.
That's part of the process. We'll get there next year.
That's the only thing I'm going to hold somebody to. I'm going to hold you to that one.
Have them sign it.
It's a slow transition.
It wasn't slow when they gave it to us.
Any other comments, questions from members of council? I wanted to review with you just briefly. I know it's a complex topic, but you assumed the capital contracting costs for the county, the procurement of that, where in prior years, you know, it had been lodged in special services,
right,
which handles all the major construction projects. So I'd just like you to comment on implementing that and how that's working out.
That's going pretty well. What we do with that is that we try to track and standardize all the costs throughout procurement. So we had special services that had the construction phase of it, but what we wanted to do is keep everything centralized. And I've been keeping metrics, my department, I should say, been keeping metrics on all the costs and the spend savings that come through all the departments. So that process is working really well. We do have good numbers, and I can share these metrics with you guys shortly, if you need it.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, comments, members of council on the Office of Procurement? Any questions from members of the public? All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
We're going to go, let's move along to human resources.
Good afternoon, Council. We can start with page one, the Office of Human Resources. As you can see, we have 19 positions that were authorized here. Currently, we have two vacancies. It splits as far as the costs for the salaries and everything. The pension pays for 5.5 persons. I have one person that is paid 100% through the pension, three that are 80%, and one that is 50% the pension and 50% with the county. So that's the other 13.5 with the county. Second page, it is a slight increase of under 1%, but in reference to a lot of that is coming from our salaries, and I will get to that a little bit later. If we can go to page five, as far as diversity, human resources predominantly a female field. We have at least, we're able this year to have someone join with us, another male that's in with the pension, and believe it not, we still continue to increase our diversity. So when you think of diversity, sometimes you have to think all the way across the fields. Page six, it shows you where with our increase is mostly with the salary and wages, employee benefits. There were some decreases in the contractual services through our EAP program. We were able to update that contract and we were able to get some decrease for the total cost of it. And of course then our the IGS costs, the intergovernment services went down. Page seven, the first one, the salary and wages, is what I had alluded to earlier. Increase attributed to merit increases. We have two people. I have a reclassification, which I would like to speak about. And it's referenced on page nine in the booklet. I am basically asking that one of my personnel, instead of being a confidential assistant, now is reclassified to human resource assistant. I need more for the hiring end of it than versus me having a confidential assistant. So those responsibilities would be more in line with the human resource assistant. The second person, and that is the program analysis. It would be a decrease in administrative aid and the program analysis person, which is 100% funded through the pension funds. This person's particular job has evolved over the years. And more importantly, I want folks to know, because people think, oh, human resources, we automatically think the actives. We have slightly under 1,500 active employees. The rest are made of the part-time, the temporary, and the seasonal, so 2,000. But you cannot always forget also, I think it was in the appendix I, the retirees, which we constantly are in communication on a very daily basis with the benefits that we still provide retirees. And we're under 1,400, but I would predict that here in a couple of years, we're going to get to a point where our retiree population with the pensioners is going to be more than our active employees. So that's something into consideration down the line here as we move forward, a futuristic trend. Page 11, most of the accomplishments, and this one's a big one that people would not think, is the transition of 411 million pension trust funds to a new custodian. We have the same pension custodian, I believe, for 10 years? 10 years or longer. So all the associated contract and all that paperwork had to be definitely taken over. Biggest thing too, besides Susan, is our new employee Frank was very instrumental in helping that process along. We did offer some training this year for folks in reference to supervisory training. Applications were down a little bit, but we still hired more folks. And in reference to some of the things that we're looking ahead, it's more on an administrative thing. We definitely, which I think IT had referred to it earlier, as far as the PeopleSoft updates that need to be done, for two reasons. One, we have now federal mandates under the Affordable Care Act, and then also the other thing too is there's some new EEOC requirements here in 2016-17. That we need those updates in the system, so when we report to the federal government in 2017, our findings will be online, which I think is a little bit encouraging because the new guidelines are going to take in several different considerations as far as diversity. A lot of times people are put in certain blocks, and people a lot of times will mention other because you have folks that are very many different races. So they would be able to self-claim themselves on the PeopleSoft, and I'm hoping we get a little bit better, truer picture of the diversity that's actually on the county's workforce. And the last couple parts are in the appendix, which I like to try to provide you, the pension, the benefit programs that we have. And the last page, appendix 3, is grievances. I don't want to jinx ourselves right now. We did, go down a little bit, so I'm hoping that we can have that trend in 2016 and onward, too.
Thank you. Any questions, comments, members of council on the human resources budget? Okay.
There's
County Auditor Bob Wasserbach, you had one to ask a question.
Yeah, Bob Wasserbach, County Auditor. I went to an employment law seminar a couple weeks ago, and I know some of your people were there, and the one of the presenters brought up these new Federal Department of Labor regulations for raising the threshold for exempt employees for when you don't have to pay overtime, and I was just wondering if that was the first time I had heard that. I was just wondering if that's going to have any impact in Newcastle County.
I think it is going to, but I think we're going to have to review it. We'll see too. I look a little bit, if we have a new administration coming in federally and everything, so I'm not sure. At least like the Cadillac tax and some other things was deferred, so I think it's a sit and wait game right now.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Carol Dooling, Council of Council. Speaking to the point you just raised, there's been in place for, I think, over a decade, federal guidelines for the public safety employees for overtime that have been implemented by a lot of states. Not any place in Delaware. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, specifically, this is...
Please identify yourself.
Bob Wasserbach, County Auditor. The Department of Labor regulations have been, as long as an exempt employee is making at least $23,500, you don't have to pay overtime to the exempt employee. They're raising that to $51,500. It may not be the exact figure, but something like $51,500, which means if we have exempt employees between $23,500 and $51,500, if these new regulations are issued, technically we have to pay them overtime. Just when I heard that, it seemed like it could have an effect upon Newcastle County.
Well, with the point that he brought up, it is definitely something that future trend that we might have to look at, just like the Affordable Care Act and some of the reporting things that are now coming into focus.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions, comments from members of council on the human resources budget request for fiscal year 2017? Any from the public? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moving on. Last but not least, Office of Finance. Save the best for last, something like that.
Well, I know that's what they always like to say, but we'll see.
Notice he has an empty room.
Yes. Everyone's leaving. Just go right to questions. This is reminiscent of, I think, the way the hearings used to go, wasn't it? I know when I was in public safety, Dave Carpenter always said he hated to be left because everyone left. But that's fine. But anyway, I'll try to be quick and brief. I know it's tough. But I'll go through the book slightly and quickly. Page 2 is our 2017 budget request showing the light tax of $5.2 million and finance 8.6, which is a 1.7% increase for finance itself over the last year. Page 4 is the pie chart, which shows, like everyone else's, our personnel cost is the largest at 85.13%. Go to page 5, you can see the personnel count increased back in 2013 when the assessment group was moved over to finance, and we picked up two extra in 2015 for the assessment group. Page 6, our diversity. That's 12/31/2015. 62% of our employees are female and 16% are minority. It was 20% before retirements, and I lost Carla Jones to public safety. But we also just added a new minority male to our Treasury customer service staff, being starting in a couple weeks. Page 7 shows our recommended budget increase. And as everyone else knows, most of it is salary and wages and benefits, with a slight increase in our contractual services also. The increase in contractual services is mostly for bank fees, processing, and some new software. If we move on to page 10. What I have here is a few of the position adjustments that I'm trying to implement. I've been downgrading some of the positions back to accountant ones. I know that when Ed and I started here back in 1977, we started as accountant ones. Mike Mackwich, who just retired, Mike Finnegan, Andrea Smith, not Mike Finney, but Andrea Smith, Mike Mack, they started as account clerk threes. As Ed and I were talking, we don't see a lot of staff, that know the nuts and bolts. We want to get back to that. That's what I'm trying to get back to. Start off with the accountant ones so that we can have a little succession plan, have a career ladder just as Ed and I were able to have, and to be sure that we have some good capable people to replace Ed and I someday. Page 11 reflects the accomplishments, and of course the biggest accomplishment always continues to be our AAA bond rating. I'm not going to get down the whole list, you all have the book. The challenges, facing us right now is, of course, one of these days, as IS had mentioned, we're going to have to replace that financial system. Right now, we're still able to do upgrades to keep it going. The other is going to be that we have to start filling these vacant positions that are just arising since August in our assessment group. We've lost four. We just lost another one to retirement. And then the other greatest challenge someday will be, as I said earlier, replacing Ed and I, and I know there's a little humor in that, but that will be a challenge someday, I'm sure. If we go to page 17. Page 17 is the vacancies. We have quite a few. We have 11 vacancies. We've just filled, as I said, the Treasury Customer Service Rep. We've just filled five of the Account of One positions, which are internal promotions. There are four females, one black female. And these promotions then will also open up eventually some new account clerk three jobs. Here again, hoping to build a good diverse group here to be taken over the finance department someday. And with that, we just skip over to the contractual services. Oh, there's a question, I'm sorry.
Councilman Smiley.
Yeah, can you say you just filled the customer service representative position?
Yes, the Treasury, the second one from the bottom, the first
one. The one solicited is unfunded.
No, that one there we didn't. It's the one prior to that.
Okay.
The oldest one.
Okay.
Yeah, the other one's the unfunded that just came up. And then, like I say, there's five account one positions that we just filled two. So the vacancy here will drop down to about four or five, which will be the assessment group, which is where we have to put our focus now. With that, we just go to the contractual services and other pages of statistics. Do we have any other questions?
Yes, sir. Councilman Weiner.
Thanks. With the shortage in assessment, does that create any functioning problems or what's spreading themselves?
The biggest thing right now is, as we see, the four positions are assessment technicians. Obviously, there's support to the assessors. And as in any shortage, it does create double work and extra workload for everyone. So, you know, the important thing is to get them filled as quickly as possible. And I know, you know, our process has taken a while, but I think our process is picking up now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilman Swiley.
I apologize for not getting to you earlier on this, but on page 19, there's a recommended budget. Third up on the right here, cash flow program, financial consultants. It's not a lot of money, but what is arbitrage software?
The arbitrage software is software that would be used, if we need to get it, to manage the difference in the interest earnings that we'd be earning on our bond issue funds versus what we're paying out. The difference between those two is arbitrage. Right now, you're generating a negative arbitrage because if we're borrowing money at, let's say, 3.5 and only earning 2, we're going to get negative.
Exactly.
And that's what this software would track.
Would monitor that.
Right, if you go above. There's only one time in my career here that the county's ever earned arbitrage, and we actually had to refund some of the interest earnings to the federal government.
Okay.
All right.
Any other questions, comments on the Office of Finance from members of council? Mike, I had a couple questions. So, on page 15, under challenges, last point, developing a new methodology in calculating sewer bills. I know that Suez, which was United Water, they've gone to monthly billing. And I don't know the other private utilities that we work with, because we calculate our sewer bills off of the water usage. Yeah. So I just wanted to, if you could comment on that trend.
Well, I think, you know, there's always been a little bit of discussion. I guess the fact is, to keep it out there as a challenge, because to be able to put forth, you know, as much time and effort that someday we can give a comparison report of, all right, here's our current method, here's other possibilities, what we consider to be the best way to go with all the companies changing. See what works best. But we continue to look at it, is what we can do, and see where we can go from there.
So you're going to get the monthly sewer billings for each customer?
No,
the monthly water usage?
No, we still get the water usage annually.
Annually.
Mm-hmm. Even though they collect monthly.
Okay.
Okay.
And bill money. We still get our information annually as we did in the past.
Okay.
Councilmember Kilpatrick.
You might not know this, but it's my understanding that Newark and Wilmington both now collect for sewer on a monthly basis through the water companies.
Don't they sell their own water?
Yeah, they've got their own water. But
see, that's
monthly billing. Yeah.
But see, they're billing for water.
Yes, so yeah. They bill for water, they bill for sewer. Yeah. Newark contracts both, but it's they're collecting sewer, is my understanding, through the water company bills.
Right, and that's what the county's dilemma had always been. They don't do water. If the county had water, they'd be able to put the two together.
But Newark doesn't do water.
Yeah, they do. They've got their own water.
That's what that's what puts them all in that position to do that. I know, you know, we were starting to, you know, you touch the tip of the iceberg a little bit. We do when we're looking into things, and even when you start thinking about if the county built monthly quarter, all that does is double, triple all the workload.
Right, but I don't want us to bill monthly or quarterly. And I mean, we know that we can pay ahead if we want. I don't want us to take that burden on. But if there was an inexpensive way for the water companies to bill whatever, you know, if there was the percentage rather than this calculation that we have, more like the commercial billing, where there was just some percentage of each water bill that they collected for sewer and then turned the money over to us.
And I have heard of some water companies that, you know, that were doing it for some municipalities. But here again, it's something we've got to look into to find out what the cost. Obviously, the big thing would always be the cost.
Right.
In the end.
Right.
But I don't think the door's ever closed on how the county operates at this, because there has been continued discussion.
Right, but how many years ago was it that we had the debacle with billing, and we talked about it back then, and we've really made no movement?
Well, and of course, here again, it's some of that's been, you know, we've been tied up with a lot of distractions in the last few years that have kept us preoccupied, I think.
Councilman Smiley.
I'll just say, I have no wish to turn our billing over to Artesian. We have enough issues now with our paying, and Artesian, I'd pay them by check because the fees to pay them over the phone or any other way are astronomical. It's cheaper to pay by check to Artesian because you can't just go online and pay like you can the others. So if they handle it, we're going to pay their fee. I mean, that's just, and again, as I said before, my concern with the monthly is if people, number one, they can pay in advance and put it on their account. I just got a problem with dealing with having 12 bills that might get late payments instead of the one. And then we're approached to take away those penalties and interest. That's just me.
And we did just try to publicize, you know, based on what council was recommending, more about the availability for the constituent to pay monthly and how we can handle it for them. So, you know, maybe that would be a big, hopefully that could help us.
Yeah, and we've been taking that to Civic Associations. A couple of us I know have been taking that to Civic Associations. Just mentioning and giving them the information and all of that, but maybe this is something that you could put in the next sewer bill, that there are options.
If
somebody didn't want to pay on an annual basis. I mean, there's pros and cons to that. If you're a good finance person and you are investing that money and you're making money off of it, then you don't want to give it up for somebody else to have it ahead of time. But there are obviously, from what our rate of return is, there are a decent percentage out there that get caught short every time the sewer bill comes out.
No, I think even, you know, we do it through community service. There's a lot of probably ways that we could, you know, offer. But I still think, you know, as Councilman Smiley was saying, we can still leave it in the hands of the constituent and just provide them the options and the opportunities, which I think was a good start, which by the recommendation of council earlier, because we just did.
Councilman Smiley.
And that just shows the differences that you run into in Newcastle County, because in my district, the people want me to make Artesian go back to the quarterly or annual billing. They don't like the monthly billing. We're so spread. Sure feels like it.
Sure feels like it.
Sure feels like it today.
You have to, because the service, their service fees got to go up. Their costs have to go up doing it monthly, I think. Definitely
pay
a little bit more.
I'm sure we do.
Just as an example, I get my personal email billed monthly by Suez. So it's an electronic system, and it costs me nothing to pay it right there.
Well, I still get the paper one from Suez.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact,
you still get the paper one.
Yes. Just got
your order all the way from Suez Canal.
It's really good, too. It goes up and down, up and down.
All right. Could we beat this horse to death? Let's just move on to two other questions that I had. Looking at 23 and 24, so we have actual performance goals, actual performance, and for both sewer and property tax. So we're claiming we're collecting, you know, depending on the year, within a couple percentage points of 100%.
Mm-hmm.
So what...
Our collection rate's always been very well.
What is the outstanding amounts owed? It's nice to see a percentage number, but do you have a sense of like...
Not off the top of my head, sir, I'm sorry. The last time, I'll let Bob Losterbach answer this time.
Bob Losterbach, in a meeting we had with finance last week and the week before,
yes.
We asked for that information.
Yeah.
And, Mike and Denny actually gave me the information this morning.
Okay.
Do you want me to?
Yes.
Yes, if you've got it.
Well.
Because I can tell you, what's stimulating this on my mind, I've got constituents with the Brandywine School District who are saying, well, why do we need to pay this, you know, $9 million, new referendum when there's all these outstanding, you know, tax liabilities owed, you know? So I need to understand the county's liability, outstanding liability, and
the
receivables for our schools.
One of the suggestions we are going to try to help. With that, we are going to try on this next one. We send out the delinquent notice. We're going to have it try and see how we can get the involvement of our law department in there to see if that changes, you know, rings a bell when they see that.
Like we're
so we have people that will actually pay the county portion of the bill and not pay the school tax? They won't pay the whole local property tax bill? Or?
Well, no, we hit them for the whole bill.
Yeah, but they don't always pay the whole bill.
Right. No, whatever they pay, a lot of them have, you know, if they're paying, some may pay $100 a month. But what it is, it's credited to the county bill first and school bill secondary.
As it should be.
In my mind.
Then we get the school taxes, it's going to be two or three times
higher. Well, yes, 70% of the local tax property tax. Okay.
Okay.
Yes. Bob Wasserbach, go for it.
Total property taxes due to the county. This actually goes back to 1934.
Oh,
how good these records are.
It's 45 hours owed from 1934.
So. Wow.
What
interest would
you
feel?
Not really. You got to be able to take the house for that.
Who's just that in?
Please don't let it be mine.
The total principal and penalty is about $5.4 million for property tax, for Newcastle County property taxes.
Hey, that's
a point in time. Yeah, these are points in times. If you go to usually about
April, June,
it'll be down. Yeah, it'll go down by the end of June because you'll get people that'll pay.
Okay.
That's what Ed was just saying, alluding to here too. I'd done a lot of this research last year. I saw it myself. You know, the best time to take the outstanding balance is really in June, halfway through.
Okay.
It'll give you a better picture.
Of we're nearly there.
Probably
3 million.
Yeah, really. Yeah, school was 22.4 million.
Yes, the school is high. Yeah.
I think we ought to move into that 45-hour property. It's going up in value by now. We can make
get that
dollars.
Parcel number all right.
That's interesting. Now, what about sewers? Sewer fees, because they were recording, you know, a higher non-collection.
This report here showing as of, what's it, what'd you say this
day? Denny said it was as of April 30th.
Okay, as of April 30th. And here again, this is going to represent high because the sewer bills were just due around March. So it's $13 million. here. Again, you got if you go at least 6 months out, because you'll see how the people pay the catch up in that. So that's why when we give these numbers and that, it's always important to note the points in times. So one thing about finance, everything's a point in time where everything's changing constantly. But I will say that you got to look out further than the current.
So it's 13
about 9 million of that is for 2016.
Right now, so that drops it right down real quick. That's those people pay.
9 million is still a lot of money.
Yeah.
Well, it is, but here again, like I say, if you look at history, you know you're going to be collecting that. As you can see by the chart, that we do collect roughly about 96% in the sewer.
Do we have any large
pretty good.
Users or bad pay, as they say?
That's not actually on the, this is just by year and total.
Oh, okay, this is by year and by total. But no, in our collections group we do.
Okay.
We certainly have the list there.
The bad pay, contact them.
Yes.
Commercial, industrial.
And when he reaches a certain point, you know, they're some of the ones that went to the sheriff's sale. We talked about it earlier.
Okay. Well, really something new to be learned at every budget hearing, and that's a mm-hmm. good, you know, thing to put your mind around. So you expect the sewer uncollecteds to decline. When do they decline?
Well, like I say, right now we're only, 2 months, maybe 2 months okay. after the original. If you go about 6 or 7 months.
And look, if you try to set the industrial going process went out, too.
Mm-hmm. And that's when they fell a lot.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions, comments from members of council on the Office of Finance Fiscal Year 2017 recommended budget? Any from the public? Anybody else?
Finished at 4:30.
Thank you. Do you have a motion?
Motion.
Oh, yes,
I have a question. Yes, I just want to get it on the record that we are preparing the budget amendment for the Ethics Commission.
Thank you. Duly noted.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
And just for the record, we'll send a notice out, email to council members Monday, May 16th, 3 p.m. That's when we'll have the budget discussion. And at that meeting, we'll make the decision whether to have the follow-up meeting that would be at 1 p.m. the next day on May 17th.
Okay.
Yeah, Ed Miller, we've notified, the message has notified Councilman Smiley, Councilman Cartier, and Betsy Gardner. There's one amendment to the capital budget and one amendment for the capital program. It's a zero effect on the capital budget. It's just moving some dollars around. But Betsy Gardner does have that as an amendment.
We discussed that briefly at the last.
Yes, I agree with that.
Thank you. Do I have a motion?
Motion adjourned.
Second.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, the budget hearing for May 10th. May 9th. 2017 budget hearing for May 9th is adjourned.